If the wire of a dipole, say for instance I'm building a dipole, I'm going to pick a number here, for 10 meters, where the dipole is approximately 16 feet long. So if I took 16 feet of wire with no gap in the center, or temporarily short out the gap in the center, and held my good dip meter toward, near the center, and push the frequency, I'm pretty sure I would find that the that piece of wire would resonate in the vicinity of 28 megacycles. When it comes to twin lead, think about this carefully. Yeah, if I took a quarter wavelength of twin lead and shorted one end and left the other end open, yeah, quarter wavelength. What's magic about quarter wavelength is that it does impedance inverting. In other words, a quarter wavelength of any cable, load the far end with the characteristic impedance. And I'll give you an example. 300 ohm twin lead, I'll put a 300 ohm resistor at the far end, I look at the input end, and make some careful measurements. I'll see 300 ohm DC to light. If I have an open circuit at the far end, open circuit is high impedance, almost infinity, the inversion of that, 1 over infinity, is 0. So I would look into the twin lead with careful instrumentation, like a network analyzer. I would measure something close to 0 ohms at the input end if the far end was open circuited. If I put a real short circuit across the end, I've now created a matched condition. Short circuit at one end reflects to an open at the other end, and vice versa. Therefore, a signal is capable of bouncing back and forth as many times as it wants to. And that's what resonance is. If the signal bounces back and forth in your network, and if all of those bounces stay in step, we call that resonance. If the circuit at your operating frequency is a little bit too long, and the bounces start falling out of step with a delay, and we call that inductive reactance. Or if it's too short, the opposite happens. They start falling out of step by being a little bit too early, leading in phase, and we call that capacitive reactance. So, if you take a quarter wavelength of twin lead, I'm going to give you an exact example. If you take, a half wave on 10 meters, 28 megacycles, which is roughly 16 feet, if I took 8 feet of twin lead, I've got to be careful now because of velocity factor. I think most twin lead has in the vicinity of 90% velocity factor. So 8 feet times
repeated, timeout, repeated, timeout, cancel.
How about that? We're not in the net mode. I take 0.9 times 8 feet. Obviously, I get 7.2 feet. If I took 7.2 feet of twin lead, short circuit one end, open circuit the other end. In other words, just put a wire across the two twin leads at one end and solder it. And now I hold my good dip meter, the coil of it, the coil that resonates the twin lead looks like, normal line to the plane of the twin lead.
Meter. But the resonance that came out, put down that nice, well, it's very nice, and from the end, and before you, of course, you had a comparative listening, of course, I, and, you know, so they came out with a nice little, take the food around coils and things, and, it's just handy to grab it over.
Yeah, I still own my tube-type Heathkit grid dip meter. I never did buy the tunnel dipper, and those who did found it a little bit more persnickety, a little bit more difficult to use than the tube type. I think it's got a 64 tube in there that does the oscillating. Your Millen grid dip meter, what does the highest coil look like, and what's your resurrection? Here we go. What's your memory? Can't think of that word right now. What's your memory of the highest frequency it goes to, Mel? Go ahead.
This was one of the later ones. You know, they started to go up in frequency, as you say. And this one is the one that uses an FET. And it became a fancy looking instrument that was also a combination of absorption. In other words, you can listen on a particular frequency, as well as resonate, or check for resonance. And the nice part about it, I was once listening on the listening side, and I just thought I could hear just a little subbies. And I'm saying, what the heck? So by moving the oscillator control, the ejection of the oscillator slightly up, I was able to get a beep. And sure enough, I heard it speed up to the mine got up close. To hear it on the grid meter. And I plugged in the key. And I came back to this fellow, and he was at that time was a novice, operating about 2.5 to 3 blocks away from the pit. So that was one of the surprises about the grid meter. But they did go up quite a bit, like you say. Some of them went all the way up around, up to, up to the UHF band. That was the last throes of them, and then, I should say, it sort of disappeared just like that as the next network analog, etc., took over the business. And now, of course, with network analogs, they're offering a lot of them add-on computers that can basically make a small interface and put the right software in, and basically you've got the so-called, I guess you could call it a four-man network analog.
Hey, you brought some memory now. The fact that my East hit grid dip meter. Also, I think it had a switch on the front panel, a slide switch that when you flipped it, it went from grid dip meter to what I would call wave meter, or absorption wave meter, or resonance indicator. So you could tune its dial. It would rectify whatever signal it heard, and had a jack where you could plug in instead of earphones, and you could use it for listening. I've also on occasion used my grid dip meter in order to create audio on amateur television. The early days of amateur television, what the guys were doing with fast scan television at 439 megacycles, is that they didn't go through all the elaboration of what standard broadcast does. Standard broadcast amplitude modulates the carrier with the picture, that's the video, and a completely separate transmitter, 4.5 meg higher in frequency and 1/10 the power with FM modulation carries the audio. That's the way NTSC, National Television Selection Committee, normal over-the-air television broadcast takes place in the United States. Well, the ham radio operators didn't want to build a second transmitter 4.5 meg higher. So they got the great idea of taking the same carrier that is being amplitude modulated with the video. They would FM modulate the carrier with audio. And they were FM modulating about 25 kilohertz. And 25 kilohertz of modulation on a 4 meg wide bandwidth of the IF strip of the video means that the video bandwidth, that little bit of FM modulation as far as it's concerned was so small, it didn't create herringbones or any other residual component in the picture when you're talking in the microphone. That's the good news. But now, you wanted a television set to have an offset for its audio pickup of 0 instead of 4.5 megacycles. Well, you couldn't do that without redesigning the set. So what guys would do is choose the right place inside of their television set where they put their grid dip meter and held the grid dip meter in the right spot, tuned it to the right frequency. And so if you had set up your system such that your 439 megacycle signal came down to channel 3, somewhere around 64 megacycles, you would tune the grid dip meter 4.5 meg above 64 megacycles. It would beep with the video carrier. That beep note would appear 4.5 meg higher in the FM modulator of the television set, which would pick out the FM modulation, and there you are. In other words, all you had to do is hold your grid dip meter in the television set at the right spot, tune the grid dip meter the right way, and now the audio came out of the set as well as the video. And so that worked extremely well. I wonder if you've heard about guys doing repeaters. I know that the guys on Long Island at 439 megs were very happy to use that technique. I wonder if some of the guys of the Kings County Radio Club ever did that, Mel. K2KEY, K2LIW.
Yeah, Roger. Yeah, I fooled a bit with ACD. Never really got into it to a great extent. I'll tell you what happened. Basically, I had a Motorola equipment transmitter, and basically converted that over to ACD. used it briefly. Didn't find a heck of a lot of interest for ATV. And at that time, seems like Locan all of a sudden came on the horizon. And at first, I didn't really, take a heck of an interest in it other than a curiosity. But I had to meet Costco and McDonald's, the guy who invented, the Locan system. How he had to be doing some fellowship here, one of the colleges. NYU or whatever. So we got to meet him and told me about the Wolfgang, and he asked me if I would like to join in on it. We'll be trying to get a number of hands together that would be willing to build the equipment and make tests that would temporary FCC arrangements on 10 meters. So I became one of the original 10. I built the flying spot scanner eventually so I could then transmit pictures. But originally I built using an old P7 box around 5A P7 built monitor. And of course still got all the back, I built the whole thing on the 630 channel. And so once I got into slow scan, that I found fascinating. Exchange pictures even though it was not the best quality. And all of us exchange pictures with people all over the world. It's been fascinating.
Yeah, that really adds a very personal touch. I can't think of Al Kohlitz right now, the man who lived in Amityville. He used to send fast scan television pictures to me. Bill, who lived in Hempstead, W2UWC, he was heavy into amateur television, as is ORS? A man who lives in Wantagh is pretty heavy into amateur television for years and years and years. So the man in Wantagh, the man in Hempstead, and the man in Amityville. And there was a guy who had a repeater set up at the World Trade Center. I believe he died when the building died. And I think from time to time there's been a repeater located at the Empire State Building.
Okay.
Yeah, go ahead, Rich.
I think you're thinking of Joseph Polanyi. He had one of the best stations going.
That was another one. Do you know Joe Rastanti? Joe Rastanti. Do you know Joe's call letters?
Oh, was it AQM or something?
W2AQM? That sounds right. The interesting thing about Joe Rastanti is that he was one of the founders of the American AMA, American Modelers Association, one of the very early founders, one of the first guys to use radio control with model aircraft, and he was also a guy with a very significant amateur television studio, literally, where he could fade from one camera to another with color pictures and special effect generators and so on. So some of these guys with television go really heavy into it. Now, I can see how slow scan television would appeal to you a little bit more, Mel, because slow scan television, properly implemented, is capable of worldwide communication, essentially the same range as a single sideband, not quite the same range as Morse code, but pretty close. Whereas amateur television, the good news is the picture is live and exciting to watch. The bad news is that television has a terrible range by comparison. And I'll give you some examples of what's going on here. In the case of sending single sideband audio, or single sideband speech over a ham radio operated equipment, a 10 decibel signal to noise ratio is medium good sounding. You'll get 98% happy of what the guy says, as long as the QRM is not too heavy. You got good communication with 10 dB of signal to noise ratio. And a good receiver has in the vicinity of 2.5 kilohertz of bandwidth of the IF strip with a single sideband signal. It's coming through your receiver into the product detector, eventually into the audio circuit, and eventually out of the loudspeaker or your earphone. So the real final radio bandwidth of a sideband signal is around 2.5 kilohertz and 10 dB of signal to noise ratio. Now let's compare that to television. The television signal, an amateur television signal, is more than 2.5 megacycles of bandwidth of the IF strip, instead of half, 2.5 kilohertz. That's a 1,000-to-1 ratio there. Second of all, a good picture on amateur television requires about 30 decibel signal-to-noise ratio for a good sync lock and not too much snow in there. And snow-free is more like 40 decibels signal-to-noise ratio. Broadcast quality is 45 to 47 dB signal-to-noise ratio. So let me take the 40 dB number as a nice, clean signal on television. 40 decibel signal-to-noise ratio instead of 10 decibel signal-to-noise ratio for sideband. That's a 30 dB delta. And 2.5 megacycles instead of 2.5 kilohertz of bandwidth of the receiver. That's another 30 decibel 1,000-to-1 ratio. You put it all together, television,
repeater, timeout, cancel.
Sure, wish the system was in the net mode tonight. In fact, let me do a quick test here. Where's the right button on my machine? Sure enough, I just found out that if you're not transmitting a PL tone, you're not coming through. Normally the machine in the net mode requires no PL and it has no timer. So looks like a little bit of an error has occurred tonight. We're not in the net mode. So anybody who wants to get through has to have a 136.5 hertz PL tone, 4Z PL, and we have to worry about the timer. So we're not in the net mode tonight. Let's hope. You put it all together and there's a 60 decibel ratio of signal strength requirement for good television transmission versus good single sideband transmission. 60 decibels of difference, that cuts down your range, something fierce. If your sideband 439 megacycle range was 200 miles, 250 miles on a good day, with, you know, a Yagi antenna on the roof of the house and 100 watts of power, talking 250 miles, sideband is pretty easy, except for a day where the propagation is really terrible. That exact same system on television is going to have great difficulty getting you 20 miles because of the 60 decibel disadvantage. So the guys who are into television really want to go to a kilowatt of power, high power, a lot of antenna on both ends, and pray for band opening. Now, when you get a tropospheric band opening, you don't get sporadic E on 439 megacycles, unfortunately. The best you do get is a tropo opening, extended duct, as they call it, or super refraction phenomenon. Yeah, under those conditions, the signal will end up 50, 60, 70 dB stronger than normal, and you'll get some very nice range. There are guys on Long Island who have seen amateur fast scan television from places like Michigan, Ohio, and the Carolinas, Virginia, and so on, during band opening. The signal's 40, 50, 60 dB stronger than normal. But day-to-day communication, getting beyond 20 miles without a repeater, is difficult. The good news is each one of us has line of sight to the World Trade Center, which is the Empire State Building, so a repeater locator there will give you something 40 or 50 miles of range. So for that reason, fast scan television, although it's a lot more technically oriented, a lot more pleasing to watch, you have a visitor who is a non-ham radio operator. Let me drop. You have a non-ham radio operator visit your shack, and you show him a demonstration of fast scan live television. It's very exciting. My buddy Al, living in Amityville at the time, used to take the camera, which was a fairly bulky thing in those days, mounted on his shoulder with a great big long cable. He would go walking around his house. He was going outside the house with the long cable, aim the camera up the tower, and you would see the antenna that's sending you the signal on the camera, and so on. Walk around the house and say, here's my mother, here's my dog, here's my living room, here's my bedroom. And, you know, it's sort of the Edward R. Murrow bit for the old-timers to know what that means, the early days of television. So it was fun, but the elaboration required is significant. The range you get is small, and so it does separate the men from the boys. It's not quite as difficult to moon bounce, but it's close. Whereas with slow scan television, you don't get the picture right away. But even there are color techniques for slow scan television, and you could, under good conditions, you're getting a picture from a guy that's in Europe or in Asia by way of closed-scan television. It takes something like 30 seconds for the screen to fill up with the picture, and then you take some form of a hard copy of it, and that could be a way of sending QSO cards. Kind of fun. Roughly how many closed-scan QSOs did you make, Mel? And did some of the other people in Brooklyn catch on to it, or was it sort of one of the specialty interests where only a small fraction of the guys went into it? K2KEY, K2RIW.
K2RSO with a comment.
RSO recognized after Mel. Go ahead, Mel.
Dick, WHCDL.
Go ahead there, Andy. Have you got it in the net mode now?
We're working on it, just to let you know. There's a little glitch. We're working on that problem.
Very good. We'll suffer with that. Mel, go ahead.
Okay, this is K2KEY. Yeah, well, I worked DXDC on FloatScan, 100 countries on FloatScan. And you say FloatScan at the time, of course. Today, using computer graphics that they have in FloatScan program, it is phenomenal. The quality is amazing. Color and all. Really excellent pictures of appearing on your computer screen. Back in my day when I first started, no, I was basically all alone here in Brooklyn for many years on FloatScan. Until Robux, a few years after that, that Robux friend out there in California, Texas ID, came up with the Robux, which was one of the first of the real commercial FloatScan packages that you gave you a monitor, a complete monitor and a camera, and a whole business which sort of gave FloatScan the shot in the arm, as they say, to become a lot more popular. As far as the excitement of it, well, you know, you say hello to have the camera turned on yourself, you say hello to somebody on the other side of the world, you know, hold up your hand in a wave manner, and then toss it back to him, and his picture come back also in a wave manner. And so, you know, when you demonstrated that to somebody and say, that's the person that's 5,000 miles away waving hello to you, it did add a dimension, really. I had a lot of fun with it. I played with it for a number of years. Enjoyed it immensely at the time, the experiments with it and everything. And then I built a scan converter so I could take the flow scan, load it into a memory, and then play it on a regular TV.